We are not going to deal with the expanded criteria. Is there any reason to spend time with the bill?
Yes. The answer to that is yes, and I would ask for a capsulized response, perhaps better than I can do it, in the form of a response from Representative Kopetsky, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Mike Kopetsky, State Representative, District 33, Representative Bellamy. A lot of the media focus and certain interest groups do have particular interest in the expanded criteria issue. And it's unfortunately or unfortunately received more media attention than the rest of the bill. But I think that all of the other changes in areas that we draw your attention to in this bill are put together are as important, if not even more important, than the expanded criteria issue.
For instance,
I'd like to give me a good example.
Good example would be the access to medical records so that the investigators and the judges have enough information to make an intellectual decision as to whether an individual ought to be committed or not. The issue of whether the DA's district attorneys ought to be organizing the case and presenting the case so that the families aren't trying to put the case together themselves in determining whether there's sufficient evidence and sufficient criteria to meet the standard. The roles of the investigators generally in the investigation process. Expansion and fulfilling the uses, the tools, if you will, that a judge has at his or her disposal in terms of what to do with an individual that's before them, whether they are conditionally released to a family member or friend with expectations and responsibilities and treatment programs, expanding on the outpatient commitment procedure, filling in some gaps that we've realized since the passage of the trial visit procedure last session. It's a reform. It's a bill that will make our system more efficient and effective.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bellamy.
We are going to be asked to take out the district attorneys. We're going to be asked to take out the, in essence, the state court because of fiscal. When we take out all of these things, I guess then I get down to the question, if we don't deal with the expanded criteria, is there anything left?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Bellamy, I'd suggest that you do take out the Attorney General changes and their new changes. I think further examination shows that, okay, take that out. But, you know, I'm here to say strongly keep that DA responsibility in. I think that's a big cause of the problem that the families have in our current system. And I think that's one of the critical features of this bill. So keep it in is my urging to you. I think it's vitally important for this bill. Somebody's got to organize that case.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
And it ought not be the judge.
If we don't deal with the expanded criteria, most of the people that have a special interest in this bill would tell you it wouldn't have done any good because there was no need of bringing a case if you didn't expand the criteria for the DA to prepare.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bellamy, not necessarily. I think that one of the problems is getting access to the medical records, for example, of the individual, of somebody organizing the case so that the judge can make a reasoned decision as to whether the individual ought to be committed or not. And that has nothing to do with changing the commitment criteria. That's utilizing current commitment standards.
Representative Bellamy.
But there are no medical records. I would venture to guess that a lot of these people could tell you that at the stage there were probably no medical records.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
The individual wouldn't go in to be evaluated.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bellamy, if you're talking about the chronic mentally ill in this state, by and large, and I'd hazard a guess of 80 80% of the cases, they have been not only to court before, but they've been to damage. There are medical records.
Senator Bellamy?
And that's the problem in the system that we're trying to address.
I think we're getting ahead of ourselves. I think the points that Bill, you may be making are points that you may want to address to the individual parts of the bill. We will progress through it.
Mr. Chair.
Sure, go ahead.
We've had a general hearing on this, and it's been a while. Would it be your opinion then that this bill is really aimed at those people who have really already been in an institution?
No, Mr. Chair, Representative Bellamy, I don't. No.
Well, but you just got through telling me that you look at they've been in damage and they've been here and they've been there.
Well, your prior question was, what if there are no medical records? And my response was, if you're looking at the chronic mentally ill, I believe that there are. If you're looking at other individuals, I couldn't hazard a guess what the percentage was. Some of them may, many of them won't. It may be the first time that they're before the court in this procedure. But for those individuals, what you want is as much information as possible, so that again the judge is making a intellectual decision and not a haphazard guess or a feeling.
So this bill, in your opinion, is aimed at both the chronically mentally ill, the ones that have quite a history, and it's also aimed at the individuals who have a problem but we have not yet ever gotten institutionalized, or they're not in the system. It's aimed at both?
They're not in the system, or if you examine when you get to looking at conditional release, an alternative to commitment, and that is to try to identify community services for that individual that is something short of a jurisdictional commitment shroud upon an individual's liberty. Mr. Chair, I recognize that during the legislative session that committees do not have a lot of hearing and work session time. The interim task force spent 18 months on this topic area with a meeting of a minimum of 8 hours a day once a month over an 18-month period, hundreds of hours and witnesses in hearing and in work session and on our own, and these are really carefully crafted compromises in many respects. And if we are going to do anything for the mentally ill in Oregon this session, it's in this piece of legislation, or you can write it off for another 2 years, and it's up to you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Baumann. No, before you do that, Representative Dix, did you have a question?
Just to refresh my memory, Representative Kopetsky, how many months did you spend working on this, the interim committee?
18. We started July of 1985. 8 hours a day, once a month, and probably easily an easy 8 hours of outside preparations. We brought in panels of witnesses where we sent them questions in advance and asked them to address the questions particular to that panel, whether it was police officers, judges, investigators, community mental health program providers, family individuals, you name it. We asked them every phase of the mental health system and problem areas, and we also asked them to come in with solutions.
Would you, and I'm asking you to venture a guess on this. Of those people who worked on the committee, would they agree with you that if we didn't look at the criteria, if we don't look at the criteria, there are other sections of this bill that we should address?
Yes.
Did the DAs and the court administrator's office have the opportunity to involve themselves in this process?
In fact, we invited a panel of district attorneys to testify as to the problems. A representative from the State Court Administrator's Office, Ms. Click, was a member of the task force.
Thank you.
Yes. Was asked to answer.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Dr. Bray, I see we have correspondence from Joe Murray dated today, I guess it is. Do you want to bring us up to date on what amendments those are that are offered?
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Don Bray, Assistant Administrator of Mental Health. The amendments that are submitted here, some were submitted previously.
Are any of these are they in our Legislative Council draft packets?
Some of them are. And I was asked by committee staff to make a comprehensive list of amendments that we were aware of at this point. So what I've attempted to do here is just make a comprehensive list of amendments. From what I've heard you say...
I'm sorry. You have in your packets an April 22nd letter from Joe Murray. And it's 5 pages long. Remember if you have that?
I know I do.
Yeah. Why don't you just take
a
comprehensive review of the amendments that you're proposing?
Yes, I'll be very brief. The first amendments are those that have been discussed, and they're the changes in criteria. If you move on to page 2, there are a series of amendments that the division is proposing where there is cost in the bill that is not included in the governor's budget. The first series of amendments would eliminate new costs to the State Indigent Defense Board. Those were based on the fact that those were not included in the budget.
Eliminates new costs to the State Indigent Defense Board is number 2?
That's on page 2, middle of the page, right after you finish the new commitment criteria. There's a break there, and then that starts the amendments that will that have to do with costs not included in the governor's budget.
On page 2, after the third line.
Right.
Okay. And what does it do?
This eliminates those sections of the bill that shifted costs to the Indigent Defense Board.
In other words, there's no more cost shifted to the State Indigent Defense Board.
That's right. The second, and in all instances in drafting these, we attempted to go back to original language so that if the county was previously responsible, that would be the case. If the state court was responsible, that would be the case. The second...
Is this Indigent Defense Board, what were the new costs?
There was a shift of examiner's costs, of some of the costs that were incurred during the hearing for indigent clients.
And those are now paid by the counties?
Those are now paid by the state court, and those would shift. So what I'm saying is those costs that were... In current statute, they're paid by the state court. They're paid with dollars made available by the state. The statute is worded that the judge selects the examiners and sets the fee, and it would return to that language.
Dr. Bray, you confused me. If we're eliminating new costs to the Indigent Defense Board and putting them back where they were, and it's now paid by the state, i.e. the state court, that isn't a shift of cost at all.
Well, you need
confused to, me. Those are both the same pot.
We need to get back to the... We need to get on with the rest of the amendments, because this is merely... This first section just was a section of the bill that said that the Indigent Defense Board would pay for this, and this is removes that, then as we go on through these amendments, you'll see that we've deleted some other items.
But my question was, the examiner's costs that are now done, assuming there's no new law, the examiner comes in. Who is that examiner presently paid by?
The wording in the current statute is that the judge selects an examiner and sets a fee.
Yeah, I believe, Dr. Bray, that presently, what this is, this removes that cost from the Indigent Defense Board and returns it to the county.
Yes.
Is the information I have.
Now, under, that's right. Under the current statute, there are two examiners. So that the bill proposes, rather than having the two examinations, to have one examination and have a more thoroughgoing examination. So we're estimating that there will be no fiscal impact there. So it's just a shifting back to how it was originally. The second part is to eliminate payment for treating physicians. This is the part of the bill where the record of treatment for the current holding period is made available to the court. And the expense incurred here was the subpoenaing of expert witnesses. It was never the intent of the task force that the treating physicians come to all the hearings. It was the intent that the examiner would have access to that record for that treatment period, and the investigator would have access, and they would be in the court. So this second section removes the funds for paying the treating physicians.
Second section meaning numbers 3 through 9?
No, that's numbers 10. Numbers 3 through 9 are the ones that clean up the Indigent Defense Board business. Numbers 10 through 13 accomplish the subpoenaing of the physicians. Numbers 14...
Then you go back up to the top of the page. What does number 2 accomplish?
Again, that was a part of the change in the commitment criteria.
All of that is commitment criteria down to little b.
That's right. And then it breaks right after little b, and that's when we move on to the costs.
Okay.
Then, again, on page 3, amendments 14 through 20 eliminate the requirement for representing the state's interest in commitment proceedings. This deletes both those portions to do with the Attorney General representing at recommitment hearings and the AG representing at the commitment hearings.
You mean the Attorney General representing at recommitment hearings and the County DA's representing commitment hearings.
Right.
That would do what? That would eliminate...
This would basically put the statute back the way it was before the bill was drafted.
So you're proposing now that the DA's not be required to come in at every hearing, and that the AG not be required to come in at every hearing where they have the jurisdiction on recommitment. Is that correct?
I'm very reluctantly proposing that because it's not included in the governor's budget. The agency cannot support something that didn't make it into the governor's budget. Number 22, 1 and 22, eliminate the costs related to discontinuing emergency commitments. This was the part of the bill where the task force found that certain counties were abusing the emergency commitment by placing patients directly in the state, or it was interpreted as an abuse of it, by placing patients directly in the state hospital. The statute was established for times when the judge was absent from the county. Then they could be directly placed to the hospital. In both of those, this deletes basically the bill would remove that. What this does is put it back the way it was.
Allow counties to abuse that. If we adopt this, we're allowing counties to abuse the system by commitment to the state system.
In actual practice, I'm very comfortable with this because the counties involved have already begun to find solutions to the problem, and one of the major counties has found a solution to the problem. So I think just the process of pointing up this problem has brought about some changes, and they would have occurred anyway. I think the counties were motivated. I'm not uncomfortable with this. 23 through 40 are a series of amendments in the costs section, which would eliminate the costs to the state that were previously assumed by the counties.
What costs?
Again, that section of the bill, in the reorganization of in the way this was drafted, that section includes all of the costs and starts with, it probably would be better to go to the bill. And it's on page 20. And this is again a portion of the bill that speaks to the cost of examiners and witnesses and counsel.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Dr. Representative Bowman.
Could you refer us to the lines? I'm here on page 20 of the bill now.
Let me interrupt here. We are going to be going through this bill, and Dr. Bray, if we're going to be doing bits and pieces, the chair wouldn't entertain any motions on any of these amendments until we get a sense of the committee on where we're going conceptually, because we'll try and break it down too far without getting a feel for where we're going. Can you give us the general sense of each of those?
Representative Bowman, Mr. Chair, if I could get a little bit of clarification so I can locate where these happen. As long as you brought us all the way to page 20, Dr. Bray, I hate to be so close. I'm not at your, do you have a...
Section 26, which starts on line 9.
Thank you.
That whole section establishes a non-exclusive list of responsibilities for payment for the various costs related to the commitment proceedings in the whole chapter. And that's why I've had to make propose so many amendments at this place, because by removing these, they're out here as well as other places in the bill. And this, but it was all summarized here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Amendment 41 was an amendment approved by the Civil Commitment Task Force and inadvertently admitted in the original task force proposal that came to you. Unfortunately, the division cannot support this amendment because it is not included in the governor's budget, and I've stated so in the memo. But this amendment would refers to utilization of liquor and cigarette taxes to pay for some of the costs that were incurred in certain of the changes in the bill. Amendment 42 would establish rulemaking authority for the implementation of House Bill 2324.
Is that necessary without any expanded criteria?
Yes, there would. Yes, there is. We would need to make a rule change concerning the contents of the clinical record in the hospitals for the period of the hold, and I believe there are some other areas that we would need to make some changes. Then, Amendment 43 just moves the date that the act becomes operative, because that section comes at the end, and that just switches them around. Finally, there are a series of amendments 44 through 48 that were typographical errors and minor omissions in drafting that, as the bill was reviewed, people found. So what this is, and we did submit those to you earlier, but I included them in this memo so that at Mr. Taylor's request, so that we would have it all in one place.
Thank you. Why don't we step through the bill? You have before you section by section analysis prepared by Dental Health Division. I want to go through the bill, and I want to hear committee members' comments, or maybe non-comments, as we dig straight through the bill. Council, we have section one. We have is psychotherapists' privilege. Can you give us about a two-liner on what that does?
As soon as I get my microphone back in here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd also like to thank Dr. Bray for supplying us with this section-by-section analysis. Section 1, if I may, Section 2,
sure.
Both deal with the concept of privilege. And I think that we've already identified these sections as being one of the two more important sections in the bill. I believe what the current problem is that investigators, because of the physician-client privilege or the psychotherapist-client privilege, are not always able to get in certain documents that would be very helpful for the judge to make a decision as to whether the person before the court should be civilly committed. And these amendments, as I said, would make it a lot easier to admit this evidence.
The evidence being what?
Evidence would be, I believe, of communications and records relating to examination of the person before the court.
And meaning those records, would that also include the records of prior commitment proceedings in state facilities? I'm trying to recollect.
I believe those... Dr. Bray, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe those would already be admitted under other exceptions to the hearsay rule. But I think in particular we're talking about the use of communication or records, but I believe prior records of commitment. But I hate to get into talking about the content of those records.
And as I recall, Representative Kopetsky, I think, spoke to that public hearing, that this is one of the more important aspects of the bill. In addition to the criteria, so far as actual day-to-day administration of the hearings on evidentiary matters, Representative Bellamy, at least that was one spoken to. Do we have any amendments that have tried to deal with this section in any way?
Mr. Chairman, I do not believe that we have. No.
Does this committee, I'm going to try and step through it one by one. Does any committee member have any interest in changing this part of the bill? Mr. Chair. Representative Bellamy.
I have to say that if we do not deal with the expanding the criteria, and in my opinion, I'm going to have to have a lot of convincing that there's anything left in this bill. Because in my opinion, we're still not going to be able to get to the people who are deeming it. I mean, we can expand all the criteria we want, but if we cannot use it for those people that need the help, then what are we doing it for?
Representative Bellamy, I think one of the points comes forward in the privilege area, and I don't know whether you had an opportunity to attend one of the commitment hearings, but when you try and deal with the population that we're speaking of, there's some pretty sharp lawyers in the system that know the evidence and privilege code pretty well that use it to defend their client, as well they should in a system that's adversarial. Sections 1 and 2 deal with the doctor privilege and will allow, well, they deal particularly with records and will allow in commitment proceedings some more evidence in to that proceeding. Perhaps the ultimate effect of that would be to commit those people, more of those people that need to be committed within the system. If you're looking for bits and parts as to what effect other parts of this bill will have, I give you that as an example. I've been one of those defense lawyers from time to time in those proceedings.
All right, we have a major bill here. We have a lot of amendments. And my opinion is that all we're dealing with is that individual.